Arunandi Sivam, the direct disciple of Meikandar. He was born in Tiruthurayur and in an Adishaiva family. He was a scholar himself, and he was blessed by Meikandar in the episode that I just narrated. And later he went on to learn the true essence of what Shivajnanam is, and went on to write books, two of which are considered as one among the 14 Shastras, the 14 Shaiva Siddhanta Shastras. He has written what is called as Shivajnana Siddhiyar, that which is more like a work that runs parallel to Shivajnana Bodham, and how the way he has split the topics and all that, it is more like an extension of an easier way of understanding Shivajnana Bodham is Shivajnana Siddhiyar. And then he has also authored what is called as Irupa Irupagdu. Now today I'll just tell the names of these 14 Shastras and its authors. Tomorrow I will give a brief introduction to each of the 14 Shastra works. So till now we have seen three books: Shivajnana Bodham by Meikandar Sivam, and Arunandi Sivam's works include Shivajnana Siddhiyar and Irupa Irupagdu. Third is Maraignana Sambandhar. He is a disciple of Arunandi Sivam, who was a resident of Chidambaram. He lived there in Chidambaram. He has lectured a lot, and he was initiated by Arunandi Sivam and went on to become one of the acharyas, who were followed by several sishyas, and thankfully he was the acharya of Umapati Sivam, one of the priests of Chidambaram, the ordained Dikshitar priest, comes from that family. But he went on to become a Siddhanta acharya for his love for his acharya Maraignana Sambandhar. So after Maraignana Sambandhar is Umapati Sivam. He belongs to the Dikshitar's community of Chidambaram. Historically his timeline is placed around the 14th century. He learnt the philosophy traditionally through Maraignana Sambandhar, and he went on to be referred to as Kottravan Kudi Umapati Sivam, because he born as a person in the Dikshitar family. He went on to become a disciple for a Shivacharya, which was not welcomed by the Dikshitars then. And of course Shiva intervened, and there was a miracle which proved the greatness of Umapati Sivam too. So he shifted to the outskirts of Chidambaram in a place called Kottravan Kudi, had his own ashrama built there, stayed there to initiate more acharyas from there. And he has authored several works, eight of which is considered to be books of the 14 Shastra collection. And that includes Shivaprakasam, Tiruvaruppayan, Vinavenba, Potri Pagdudai, Kodikavi, Nenjividutudu, Unmainari Vilakkam, Sankarpa Niragaranam. Big and small, these eight are authored by Umapati Sivam. So we had three by the first two acharyas, Shivajnana Bodham, Shivajnana Siddhiyar, and Irupa Irupagdu. Now you have eight more works. So this is, and from Umapati Sivam, apart from these eight works, he has also authored Shekidar Puranam, Thiruthundar Purana Saram, Koil Puranam, which details out the history of Chidambaram Temple, and Tirupati Kovai, and a few more books. So apart from the Shastra books, there are other works that have been authored by Umapati Sivam too. So these are the four acharyas called as the Santana Acharyas, balancing the pan. On one side we have the Samayacharyas, which includes Appar Sambandhar, Sundarar, and Manikavachakar. Very clearly, if you visited temples where these acharyas are enshrined, you see them all seated. While the four Samayacharyas are always standing, you see these four acharyas seated. It is a general note in the Shilpa Shastras, the text treatises on iconography, which demands that acharyas, the Bhakta Murtis as we call them, these are all Bhakta Bimbas. So the Bhakta Bimbas or acharyas who had their Sishyas alive and active in their own time to continue the tradition, when there is an established parampara like that, the murti of that particular acharya is shown to be seated on a throne. So you have on a pedestal. So these four acharyas who had their direct disciples are always shown seated on a pedestal with their hands in Jnana Mudrai, and mostly their left hand holding the text. So unlike the Samayacharyas who are standing always. So that is about the four acharyas, starting from Meikanta Sivan, Arunandi Sivam, Maraignana Sambandha, and Umapati Sivam. So because this celestial knowledge of the Agamas as the works for Shaiva Siddhanta got transferred from Kailasha through Meikantar, this tradition is called as referred to as Meikantar Santanam. That is how the name comes. So after Umapati Sivam had several disciples, and each of them apparently turned out to be one of the Sthapanacharyas or the Mula Purushas of various adhinams that we see here today as propagators of Saiva Siddhanta tradition. So going into the 14 Shastra works, as I just told you, the first and the foremost and the most important primary work for Saiva Siddhanta are, of course, you have the Vedas and then you have the Agamas, and from Agamas, to make it even more simple for us, we have the 12 Thirumurais celebrated by, as authorship by the Nayanmar saints and other Acharyas. Then later in the list we have the 14 Shastras, the Siddhanta Shastras, out of which the first is Shivajnana Bodham, authored by Maikanta Shivam, Maikantar. Then you have Shivajnana Siddhiyar and Iruba Irubagdu by Arunandi Shivam. Then you have two interesting works which even predates Maikantar. You have works named as Thiru Undiyar and Thiru Kalitrupadiyar, both of them authored by authors who were there, who lived here before the times of Maikantar. Somehow we have this, so we have the tradition of Shaiva Siddhanta, which has been an established system here, but the Agama Jnanam and the Siddhanta Jnanam as such has been handed over only through Maikantar. But Shaiva Siddhanta, maybe in a different name, has existed here, that is for sure. So you have two works which belongs to the time before Maikantar, which is called as Thiru Undiyar and Thiru Kalitrupadiyar, both authored surprisingly by persons with same name, Uyavandadevar, but they are from different places. Thiru Undiyar is authored by Uyavandadevar from a place called Thiruviyalur, and Thiru Kalitrupadiyar is authored by Uyavandadevar from a place called Thirukadavur, both of which are popular shrines sanctified by the hymns of Devaram. So Thiru Undiyar by Thiruviyalur Uyavandadevar and Thiru Kalitrupadiyar by Thirukadavur Uyavandadevar. Then you have one more book called Unmai Vilakkam, authored by Manavasagam Kadandar. So these are the three Acharyas who are outside the list of the Santana Acharyas, the four Santana Acharyas. Maranyana Sambandar hasn't authored any book. So apart from him, we have the other three who have authored the remaining books. So these three works of the 14 are by Acharyas who are outside the list of Santana Acharyas. Then you have the remaining eight works, Shivaprakasam, Thiruvarutpayan, Vinavenba, Potri Pagdodai, Kodikavi, Nenjividuthudu, Unmainari Vilakkam and Sandarpa Niragaranam by Umapati Shivam. This is how the 14 works are classified. I'll just call it out again. Shivajnana Bodham by Maikandar, Shivajnana Siddhiyar and Iruba Irubagdu by Arunandi Shivam, Thiru Undiyar by Thiruviyalur Uyavandadevar, Thiru Kalitrupadiyar by Thirukadayur Uyavandadevar, Unmai Vilakkam by Manavasaham Kadandar, Shivaprakasham, Thiruvarutpayan, Vinavenba, Potri Pagdodai, Kodikavi, Nenjividuthudu, Unmai Neri Vilakkam and Shankarpa Niragaranam by Umapati Shivam. That's the list. Now we will understand a little about the connect between Shaiva Siddhanta and Kashmira Shaivam through a few works that seem to deliver to us the content which matches. Before that, the very meaning of Siddhantam is a dogma that is settled beyond any doubt. Truth that is received, that has been tested, admitted as the foremost element, and it is accepted. It is also means established and accepted view of a particular school. So when it comes to Shaivam, the Siddhanta Shaivam means that which has been established and accepted by and large as the essential parts or the quintessence, the essence of a particular school of thought. In predominantly, Siddhantam is a common word for many schools in Indian philosophy. But here, when you say Saiva Siddhantam, it is that branch of Shaivam which is being time-tested, settled, argued upon, accepted by and large, and a well-established dogma. So we have the Siddhanta texts. When we say Shaiva Siddhanta text, we generally refer to the Thirumurais and the 14 Shastra works. But there are also other schools which claim their works to be Shaiva Siddhanta. Now we need to understand this to understand at a deeper level how Shaiva Siddhanta is not restricted only to Tamil Nadu or Sri Lanka or places where you have Tamil speaking population, but it is a concept which is pan-Indian in nature. Now we travel a little outside to Kashmira school first. You have an Acharya called as Ugrajyoti, who is identified as a person who evaluated, read and authored commentaries and compiled several texts on Siddhanta, especially from Raura Tantra, Swayambhuva Sutram, in fact, a work called Swayambhuva Sutra Sangraham. It's a compilation of the Swayambhu, the sutras from the Swayambhu works, and then you have from the Rauda Tantra how the Siddhanta aspects were compiled by a person called Ugrajyoti. And Ugrajyoti's lineage, his Sishyas, are predominantly from Shaiva, Kashmira Shaiva school. A few popular ones are Srikanta, Narayanakanta, Ramakanta and Vidyakanta, out of which Ramakanta is the most important name to be remembered, because a corpus collection of Siddhanta works were interpreted by Bhojaraja around the 11th century. Bhoj, as you know, again, the Central Indian school. This is why yesterday also when I was telling about Kashmira Shaivam, I told you, though the name, by name it is called as Kashmira Shaivam, it is not regionally restricted to Kashmir. It is, it's because it was popularly from there, it is called by that name. But the more ideal name to represent Kashmira Shaivam would be Trika school. So you have Bhojaraja. Again, Bhojaraja claims Amartakamata to be his acharyas, which I just told you in the beginning of today's session. So he, from the 11th century, has compiled the essence of all these works from Raura Tantra and other things into a work called Tattva Prakasha. Now, again, in Kashmira Shaivam, you have 8 books called as the Ashtaprakarana, a compilation which is called as, which includes Tattva Prakasha, compiled by Bhojaraja. Then you have Tattva Sangraha, Tattvatraya Nirnaya, Ratnatrayam, Bhogakarika, Nadakarikai, Mokshakarikai, Paramoksha Nirasakarikai. So these are the 8 works. Don't worry about remembering all these names, but just remember that there are 8 works in Sanskrit compiled by Acharyas who belong to the Kashmira Shaiva school. But and the first work is of course by Bhojaraja. What is interesting is to note that Abhora Shivacharya, whose paddhati is what we follow as Agama paddhati in various temple rituals here in Tamil Nadu today, has commented upon the first 6 works, including that of Bhojaraja. And you have Sri Ramakanda from the Kashmira Shaiva school, who's commented on the last 2, namely Moksha Karike and the Paramoksha Karike, Paramoksha Nirasa Karike. So you have Ishana Shivacharya, one of the prominent acharyas of the Siddhanta school following the Agamic tradition, who has commented on books which are compiled by acharyas from the Kashmira Shaiva school. So that is why these are areas where there is an overlap in the philosophy. So that is why schools like Trika are to be understood as a part of Shaivam. And there are, if you do a Venn diagram, there is always an intersection part for all these schools. And very interestingly, the commentary by Abhora Shivacharya to Bhojaraja's Tattva Prakasha starts by a declaration that Abhora Shivacharya gives, where he very clearly says, the commentator who has worked on this book before me, the person who has commented on this work before me, without the slightest knowledge in Siddhanta Shaiva or the Agamas, has been a Mayavadi probably, or a Smritikara, or an Advaiti, who without having a knowledge in Agamas has ventured into commenting on these books which are quintessence of Siddhanta. So he very clearly details the commentary which was authored before and says that this is the reason why I am venturing into it, because the previous commentator has interpreted it without the knowledge of Agamas. So probably he has given a faulty interpretation to it. So I am venturing into this act by the blessings of Shiva to comment it based on the Agamas, interpreted through the Agamas. So we have, and Abhora Shivacharya in all good probability definitely belongs to a period before even Maikanda. So as we know, we have 2 other works which predates that of Maikanda, Shivajnana Bodham. Given all of these facts, we can be sure that Siddhanta Shaivam as a school has existed pretty much here several centuries even before Maikandar's birth here. And it has been an accepted school, one of the popular schools, probably has also coexisted with other schools like Kalamukam and Pashupatam and other schools that were prevalent here, as we know through various epigraphs and inscriptions. And it has managed to be fine-tuned, brought into a kind of an order, and brought into structured school of thought with authority books authored, namely the 14 Shastras to be particular, and brought into different branches and monasteries much later. Also, one more thing to remember here is, so we also know that Abhora Shivacharya as a personality comes down from the Central Indian Amartakamata school and reaches here to establish Shaiva Siddhanta traditions and follows it in temples. And the rituals as prescribed by him is what is followed today. So by all of this, you can be for sure that Shaiva Siddhantam as a work, as a philosophy, is certainly extremely old and a time-tested philosophy, argued, debated upon propagated by different branches and all of it only to culminate into the Maikantar school, predominantly seen here in South India. So Maikantar school is one of the branches of Saiva Siddhanta in Tamil as a regional language. It is more apt to academically look at it that way. So as far as Siddhantam in Tamil works is concerned, we have Thirumoolar, who has described Siddhanta in many of his songs in Thirumantram. In one particular verse he says, Saiva Siddhantam is what is to be accepted by the learned people, and he himself says, having practiced all the yoga and having pursued the path of jnana for graduation, sure, I have understood that it is Saiva Siddhantam which helps me understand the envision the supreme, the self-created person who is God. So that is how Thirumoolar celebrates Saiva Siddhantam. And at a generic level, we can definitely say it's one of the most logical, rational and philosophy that has answered quite convincingly queries that a spiritual seeker has. Majority of the queries that a spiritual seeker has. This philosophy has not prescribed by and large to accept anything as a practice or to take up things without questioning, because all these acharyas have themselves questioned and accepted things, and all these have been documented for us as works. So there is a lot to there is nothing that is against nature, or there are not rituals that are prescribed which looks very esoteric or gory in nature. There is nothing like that. There is a lot of importance to love and compassion to Shiva and his creations around and all that, which makes this a easily approachable philosophy that can be easily practiced also, and definitely elevates oneself not just at the physical level or mental level, more at a spiritual level too. And I'll just go into the section where I describe a little on the basics of Siddhantam, or how we understand God especially in Siddhantam. Saiva Siddhantam is based on three realities. So it is, that's like the foundation for understanding Saiva Siddhanta. You have the Pati, or the owner literally translated, or God more easily to understand, and the Pashus, that is the soul, the human souls here that you see here as Uyir, as it is called in Tamil, and the bondage which holds on to us, which holds us to this physical world, or the Pasam. So Pasu, Pati and Pasam are the three words that are to be understood as the foundation aspects when it comes to Saiva Siddhanta. It also elaborates all the spiritual matters that involves the soul into it. I mean, how a soul is to be understood, how are the three related, how long have these three things been, and all that. Quite surprisingly, Saiva Siddhantam does not consider just God to be eternal in nature, but the souls, or the Pasus and Pasam also has all been eternal. It has always been there. There cannot be a particular date of origin to any of these three things. Generally, we consider God to be Anadi, the one who has always been there, but here the Uyirgal, or the Pasus and the Pasam are also Anadi. They have also been there always. And they don't have, when I say they have been there, they've been there always, they don't have a beginning or an end. And souls, they are countless, they are way too many, but they have their own limitations too. Its capabilities, or its tendency, its knowledge level is limited because there is this chain of Pasam, or the bondage which holds to it. This is, these two are also eternal. So capabilities of a soul is constrained or restricted to a level because of the bondages. And as you can see, cows, literally, when I say the animals, cows are always held by a rope which holds them. There is always a control. They are seldom left free. But the most safest way to keep them is to bind them with a rope and tie that to one end where a control is. So it looks like as if it is free, but the freedom is restricted and constrained. We as individual souls are also like that. So the Pasam that holds us is the rope which is used like a chain to hold us on to all the impurities that we see here. And as an extension to these three realities, there is a concept of five entities to be understood. To begin with, God as the supreme being and as a person who is all-knowing, who is like the most powerful, there is nothing that which he does not know, there is nothing that which he is not capable of, there is absolutely nothing like that, he is the ultimate. Then you have the souls that are capable of knowing things because he has given us the physics and senses and other things, but they can learn it only when they are taught, because the souls aren't, because there is the constraint of these impurities which holds on to us, which restricts us from knowing everything like God. So if only we are taught, we know. Then you have the most important aspects, the three impurities, namely anavam, karmam and maya. Anavam is like egoism or arrogance, which is a byproduct of egoism. That's like the most popular and powerful impurity, which has always been their primary impurity. And it also, as a byproduct, arrogance create ignorance. So it is this ignorance which is the first enemy to be fought a war against and won over through the blessings of acharyas who are there as representatives of Shiva. So anavam. Then you have karmam, which actually gives us the acts, which gives us the experience to the soul. And going by the senses that we are blessed with and the sensory perceptions, the various parts in our body, which are to be best utilized for activities that would actually earn a Shiva Punyam, but we utilize it for other activities which causes a lot of distractions, disrupts our spiritual progress and in fact strengthens the chain that is a bondage to us. So that is also in a way leading us to ignorance. Then you have finally maya, which helps the soul to get away from ignorance. It's like the source for the cosmos, which includes the world and all the living entities here. So as you see the world around, which is not actually the truth, is how it is to be understood. It helps us to get more deeper into our ignorance. So you have these three aspects, the three different forms of impurities, of which primarily it is anavam, second is karmam, and finally maya, and God and the soul. So these five elements, if we can understand the nature of each of it, the qualities of each of it, their work as individuals, how they perform, and they are the way all these five are related, at least the souls, the way they are related to the three forms of impurities, and how our connect with Shiva is blocked because of these three impurities, and Shiva the merciful has given us all these acharyas who have given us these works who help us gain the knowledge to dissolve these impurities that are more like blankets on us, shed them one at a time and get rid of them to purify ourselves, cleanse ourselves and attain moksha. So this is the whole cycle to be understood. Anavam, Kanmam and Maya are inanimated. They are not living entities. They are not capable of jnana, they are not capable of knowing anything, because even if anything is taught, unlike the souls, the pasus, even if anything is taught, they cannot learn it. God and the souls are like animated, there is life to it. God is all-knowing and the souls that are capable of knowing when taught. So that is the restriction, which one of the prime most qualities that differentiates God and the souls is, God is all-knowing and all-powerful. There is nothing that which he does not know, nothing which that he cannot. But the contrast is, the souls are capable of learning when they are taught. So there is that little constraint. They are not knowledgeable by default. From the times when there is no records for when it started, the souls have been associated with anavam, and they are concealed, which kind of conceals the jnanam to the soul. Anavam, that is why is considered to be the first and foremost enemy, is got to be fought against in the spiritual progress, in the war for intellect and jnana, and that is the one that conceals the knowledge which the souls can attain or be taught. God, who is all merciful, took pity on us and created body and the different organs and a world where this can be placed and the environment which gives us all the pleasures. Four words that are to be remembered: Tanu, Karana, Bhuvana and Bhoga. All these four aspects, because the souls are otherwise they are though they can be initiated into jnana and all that, it needs a place and a interpreter to which it can add on to and teach. So that is where the physical self comes in. So your organs, your senses and the world where it has got to be placed, and all the experiences that you give, the pleasures of the physical world that you give. Tanu, Karana, Bhuvana and the Bhoga. So all these four aspects are given by God. So we utilize time and again. That is why the Padigams, where Upper Brahman speaks about the service that has got to be rendered through each part of the body. What is the purpose of a mouth that does not sing the praise of Shiva? What is the purpose of the legs that does not walk around the temples of Shiva? What is the purpose of the ears that does not listen to the names of Shiva? So this is exactly why our Tanu and Karanas have been given. The senses and the various different parts of body has been gifted for doing these good deeds. That is where the jnana comes in. But we unfortunately, because of the anavam which is conceals it, we spend our the senses and our the organs for bodily pleasure and experiences that are not going to last long. Then all the five elements or the categories that are interconnected, you have the panchabhutas, they are all as creations of God. That is why we have the form of the system of worshipping these panchabhutas as Shiva himself manifested as different Shivalingams in specific temples. So starting from Prithvi up fire, which is Tejas, and then Teja and Vayu, air and ether, Akasha. So all these five elements, they are interconnected. And in a logical approach and as a perfect means for philosophy, we understand that this is how it is being handled for us. Yeah. So the logical approach to ultimate reality must exist, will definitely accept the existence of God. So that is one common thing that you see in all the thousands of philosophies. Acceptance of a concept called God, who pervades, who is all powerful, who knows everything, is there. The qualities, aspects is what differs. And then, so Saivism definitely believes in the existence of God or Pati. He is like the Lord of all the souls. All things that goes through the process of having a origin and then it suffers through its life cycle and then there is a final day for it. So that is there. So we need, there is a person who controls all of this as the most powerful. So considering all that, the existence of God has been accepted, well established, and the qualities of gods are what we see as qualities of Parameshwara. Now one important thing to be understood here is Shiva as envisioned as the ultimate form. We are not sure as to how that form is, but this form of Shiva with the Jatabhara, Ganga, Chandra and all those various flowers, the Nagavarana, the Kantam, the Alagala and his Kantam, the one who holds the Trishula and all that, is referred to as Shrikanda Rudra or Shrikanta Parameshwara. That is the form Shiva takes when he is in contact with worldly beings like us. That is why every time the last song in Periyapuranam speaks about the salvation that each of the Nayanmar attain, he says how Parameshwara along with Parvati in most cases in the Rishabhavagana comes down and blesses the Nayanmars, each of them on that day. So this description, the physical description that is given is to that form of Shiva who is called as Shrikanta Rudra or Shrikanta Parameshwara, but there are other layers above him also that goes all the way up to Sadashiva, the form of whom is not understood by people who are mortal beings. So it is only to be envisioned when one reaches the loka there, but till then this is the form of Shiva as understood by our acharyas, who that Shiva takes when he comes down here to this earth to connect with the physical beings here. Shaivites believe that the form of Shiva can be interpreted in three ways. You have the form, you have the formless, and then you have an intermediary line, the form which is formless. So the amorphous form. So you have various different murtis of Shiva, as the 25 Maheshwara murtis and the Ashtashtamurtis, the 64 Ashtashtamurtis and all that. So those are, through our acharyas as we have got, those are the Uruva or the Rupa Murti. And then you have the formless, which is like the Dharakasa or the sky which is of intellectual superiority, that which is envisioned to be the residence of Shiva where he performs the Jnanakasha and all that. That's like the formless. And then you have an intermediary form which is amorphous, which is that of the Shivalinga, the Rupa Rupam, which is the Shivalinga, and that is the most easily approachable form to worship because it contains the essence of both form and formlessness, both of it together. So every time you have a darshan of a Shivalingam or worship it, you can understand how Parameshwara is capable of being form, being with a form. At the same time, he can be formless also. So all of this is like the basic concepts to which helps us understand God. our body and God's body, the physical self, are totally different. Ours is a product of Maya, the elements that goes into making this universe, which is because of His karuna, His kripa, or His mercy. And we get these bodies because of our karma. And when we are dead, we leave this body behind. But God's body is totally different from this, because there is no origin point or end, or we don't even have knowledge good enough as beings of this physical world. We are not even capable enough to understand or perceive the form of that ultimate God as such. There again, it was by His mercy that Parameshwara took different forms, and with the lowest of, and in the hierarchy, the lowest one is that of Srikanta Rudra or Srikanta Parameshwara, as we see him through the way our acharyas have perceived. The five important tasks of that which Parameshwara only is capable of performing: creation, protection, destruction at the end, concealment when you are not matured enough, when the atma, the soul is not seasoned. Finally, when the soul is seasoned and matured to receive His grace, the fifth job of grazing that particular soul. So creation, sustenance or protection, and destruction, finally the samhara, and then you have tirodhana, or hiding or concealing it because of the effect of maya on us. And finally, when we shed all these impurities by the grace of Shiva and our acharyas, we are graced. So this is the five different jobs that Shiva performs. And the Panchakshara mantra is like the most important mantra, which helps us meditate on that Shiva who performs all these five jobs. So that's a very brief introduction to God as a concept in Shaiva Siddhanta. We've seen in today's session, we've seen about the Guru Parampara for the Siddhanta. And the most important learning I would request is to understand that Shaiva Siddhanta is not geographically restricted to South India or Tamil Nadu in particular, or Tamil as a language medium of instruction. In fact, the Maikantar Sandhanam and the schools that we see here predominantly today is more a regionalized version of Shaiva Siddhanta, which is a pan-Indian concept. So you have the origin from the Amartakamata school, and how you have texts like the Ashtaprakarana from the Kashmira Shaiva works, which has been accepted by the Kashmira Shaiva Acharyas, and those that have been commented upon by them have been accepted as partly into the Shaiva Siddhanta also, and how people like Agora Shivacharya, who is an authority in Shaiva Siddhanta, has commented upon these works, interpreted it through the knowledge gained by the Agamas and more. So the Acharya, the lineage of Shaiva Siddhanta as a pan-Indian concept. Second is about the Maikantar Santanam, where you have these four Acharyas celebrated as the Santana Acharyas, namely Maikanda, Arunandi Shivam, Maranyana Sambandha, and Umapati Shivam. And the list of 14 Shastras authored, 11 of which are authored by the three of these four Santana Acharyas, and three others by which have existed even before their times. And as an introduction to Shaiva Siddhantam, the concept of God. Tomorrow we will deal more into the three impurities and the role of the soul and the characteristics of a soul, and how we shed our impurities, and what is the path that Shaiva Siddhanta prescribes to attain liberation, and a very generic introduction to the 14 Shastra works in tomorrow's session. Namaskaram. Ponnum meiporulum taruvanai, bogamum thiruvum punarpanai, pinnai enpulayai poruppanai, pulayalam tavira panippanai, inna tanmayan endru ariyavanna emmanai, elivanda viranai, annam vaigum vayal padanathani aaruranai marakkalumame, vaazhga andanar vanavaraninam, விழ்க தன்புணல் வேந்தனும் மோங்குக, ஆழ்க தீயதெல்லாம் அரண்நாமமே சூழ்க, வையகமும் துயர் தீரவே, வான்முகில் வழாது பெய்க மலிவளம் சுரக்க, மன்னன் கோன்முறை அரசு செய்க குறைவிலாது உயிர்கள் வாழ்க, நான்மறை அறங்கள் ஓங்க நத்தவம் வேள்வி மல்க, மேன்மைகோள் சைவ நீதி விளங்குக உலகமெல்லாம், மூர்த்தியெல்லாம் வாழி எங்கள் மோன குருவாழி, அருள் வார்த்தை என்றும் வாழி அன்பர் வாழி பராபரமே. எல்லாம் ஸ்ரீ தியாகராஜ கிருபை, ஸ்ரீ தியாகராஜ மகாராஜோ விஜயத்தே. ஆரூரா தியாகேஷா.